This week's episode of the Moderate Podcast is brought to you by Relief Factor. Pain from everyday living, exercise, or just getting older is one of the leading causes of trips to the doctor and sleepless nights. It interferes with daily activities and can even keep us from spending time with the people we love. If you have everyday pain, it stands to reason you need something you can feel comfortable with taking every day. That's why doctors have invented 100% drug-free Relief Factor. Now, tens of thousands of customers are using Relief Factor every day to become mostly or completely pain-free. 100% drug-free Relief Factor features four key ingredients that each work on a different metabolic pathway to support your body's natural healing processes to respond to pain and inflammation. Now you can try Relief Factor too. The three-week quick start retail price of almost $70 is now available to our listeners at just $19.95. Head to the link in our show notes to find out more. Start your journey to better health and less pain today with Relief Factor. What's up, everybody? Welcome to this episode of the Moderate Podcast for Saturday, June 19th, 2021. It is the first official Juneteenth celebration. Is it remembrance? When it comes to these type of holidays, is it something you celebrate, or is it something that it's a remembrance because it's a solemn thing because you're remembering slavery? But I guess it's a good thing because you're remembering the end of slavery, even though there are some disputes on the date, but nonetheless, the federal government this week has officially made Juneteenth a holiday. And I do want to spend a quick minute on that and some people pointing out Charlie Kirk's hypocrisy on this. So I guess last year, Charlie Kirk, who is a young conservative, he made a statement that Senate Republicans put forth, a Juneteenth bill, and that he urged the country to support it, that this needs to be recognized. And now that they've done it under Democratic rule, he's saying we don't need another summer holiday and this is not necessary. So now that Democrats have passed it, all of a sudden his tune has changed in just a year's time. Now, I think that that is something that should be recognized because that is a very defining thing of our country, in the founding of our country, and then, of course, the Civil War. The Civil War was primarily about slavery. Now, that does not to say that the North was racist and that they saw black people the same as white people, but they recognized enough the fact that black people were still people and that the institution of slavery was evil. And that was recognized from the very beginning of the country. And so that's what it was always a point of contention from day one in the history of our country. And so it really should be something that we commemorate, that remember, because it was a big turning point in our country when that was ended. Now, that was just the beginning, because it did take us another 100 years to finally recognize black people as equal to white people. So if you think about the history of our country, still the majority of the time of our existence, black people were not recognized at the same level as white people. And so it does take a long time to undo that. And especially I'm not going to get into it again. We've talked about it enough. You know my stance on that. You know my stance is that we basically allowed them into the race unfettered for the first time, coming up on 60 years ago, right? And yet we didn't say, okay, well, we're going to help you get back up into the race and get equal to so everyone can be on equal footing. That never happened. So they started off in a behind position, even though they're allowed to race at the same pace as us. And lo and behold, they started up out behind, economically, and they've kept pace economically, but at that same pace. So they were, the median income for a black family is 40% lower than that of a white of white people, right? It was that way 60 years ago, 50 years ago, and it's still that way today. So they've kept up. So that part of it worked, but they're still 40% behind. And that's a that's the problem that we never fixed. And a large reason they were 40% behind is because of our oppressive laws. So the oppression of the past, I think that people need to understand, it's not oppression that's taking place today. Because I think people say, oh, you know, black people are oppressed. Well, no, and that's where Republicans are like, wait a minute, or conservatives are like, wait a minute, no, you're not oppressed. You have just as many freedoms as everyone else, and that is true. They do, but what they don't what people don't recognize is the oppression of the past still impacts the way things are today, because we never made up for that. You can undo it, but then you also have to go a step further and undo what happened in the past to get them back up, because we were the cause of it. The country was the cause of it. The government was the cause of it. I'm not going to say white people were the cause of it. I'm going to say the government was the cause of that because of the laws that we had. We first allowed slavery. Then when we outlawed that, we still allowed Jim Crow laws for years and years and years. So, you know, we had separate but equal for way longer than slavery even existed in this country, because slavery didn't even last 100 years in the history of this country. But then the following 100 years after slavery was ended is when we had separate but equal. Well, separate but equal, by definition, is discriminatory, right? I mean, it'd be impossible to argue that it's not. But then once that ended, then what do you do? Well, it's like, okay, well, you're on your own. You know, if I get to start out and I grew up in a house and I inherit that house, I'm going to be better off than somebody that inherits a tent, right? I've inherited more wealth than the people of the past. Now, my story is a little bit unique in that I am, you know, half my family is from, you know, immigrants. But, you know, on my dad's side of the family, you know, we've been in this country for a very long time and have always had the opportunity to own homes and live in a middle-class lifestyle free from discrimination. Whereas, you know, our black counterparts that have been around in the country as long didn't have that opportunity. And so we benefit from our past. We benefit from our ancestry, and or we can be hurt by that. And that's, I think, the point of it. I spent way more time on that than I had planned. So, you know, that's how it goes on this show. This will be a short show today because I'm going to talk a little bit about inflation and the economy, and that's about it. That's really all I'm going to really discuss today. Again, it's just harder and harder to put together a comprehensive show, doing a lot of the research to do that. But so it's some of this stuff that I'm going to talk about is kind of off the cuff, and it might kind of meander a little all over the place. So it might not be as coherent as you're used to on this show, but I think you'll still see the underlying point. So obviously now with more and more states getting fully reopened, California kind of lagged in that department a little bit, but we're finally have gotten past that hurdle this past June 15th. And now for the first time in over a year, yesterday at work, I didn't even have to wear a mask, which was pretty cool. It was a little bit weird going into, you know, I walked to get lunch yesterday at a little shop downtown. And I wasn't sure what I was going to, I didn't bring a mask with me, but I was a little bit worried about it because there are some businesses that still require it. Well, fortunately, the one I went to, it was optional. So they had a mask required sign, and then they put a little sticker over it that said optional. So that was a little bit of a relief. But standing in there and saying, oh, gosh, am I following the rules? Because I'm a rule follower. You know, again, it's like, yeah, call me a sheep all you want, whatever. You know, I don't want to. It's a mask. You know, if it makes people feel better, well, you know, whatever. But, you know, the thing that I've noticed is that people are wearing masks everywhere still. I still see it when they're outside. Like, what? And there's people I've seen walking around that I work with that are wearing masks that I know are vaccinated. So who are they trying to protect? Because, again, The mask is for who? Other people. And it's like we've forgotten that. Now, I've seen people online say that, well, I'm going to continue to wear my mask so no one thinks I'm a Republican. So now that clearly means that the masks are no longer about science and about actual protection. They're a political statement. That's what they've become. And the problem with that is that there were some legitimate merits to them. But now we've destroyed all credibility with this insistence that we continue to wear masks simply to prove that we are liberal or that you're a Democrat or that you're not a Republican. That is so detrimental because in times that we probably should be wearing them and that they're necessary, we won't do it because we've equated it to purely be about politics. And so there's going to be half the country that's never going to believe in masks ever again, no matter what the science says. Because the people that actually advocated for them and had the science on their side have now destroyed their own credibility. So that is where it's a problem and a detriment to us a little bit. So going back to the economy, obviously the economy is a much different place than it was a year. Well, really a little more than a year ago, because back in June of 2020, we already started to see things start to kind of come back a little bit. Not to the extent they are today, of course, but definitely it was June of 2020 was definitely better than March, April, certainly March, the end of March. April and May were horrible. And June was, you know, it could have been worse, I guess, is the point. So when you look at May over, you know, you look at inflation in the May statistics, inflation was 5% year over year. Okay. That's high. It's the highest it's been since the mid 2000s. And historically speaking, inflation averages around 3-4% in any given year. Historically, when you average it out with double digit inflation that we saw in the 70s and the 80s, my dogs are in here, so if you hear jingling in the background, that's what that is, and they need to stay quiet, but I can't really make them stay quiet because I'm trying to do the show. That's another reason that this is getting harder and harder to do, because I have to have the dogs in here, because if they're not in here, they're in the garage, and if they're in the garage, I'm making noise, and that then distracts from my wife, and she's trying to do her work because she's doing telehealth still from her office in her house, and it's a whole big thing. Anyway, so when we see inflation, when you think about it in the context of what we've seen, 5% seems like a lot. But it's part of that's because inflation has been really, really low for a long, long time. When you look at the last 7-8 years, inflation's been really low. And it's remained low despite low interest rates. Typically, what you see is when the interest rates get low, you see inflation start to creep up. And that was always the fear, that with these near zero interest rates, the Fed funds rate, that you would eventually, that would lead to inflation. But it never did. And I would argue that even now, it's not leading to inflation. What's leading to inflation are supply shortages combined with increased demand. Because again, you're thinking about May to May, right? Demand in May of 2020 was way, way lower in the overall economy than it is today. There's more construction happening. There's more economic activity in general happening because people are free to do things again that they weren't allowed to do a year ago. And so that is going to lead to inflation. And then when you combine that with the shortages that were caused by the pandemic, because remember, supply is a leading indicator, right? So supply has to predict demand. That's why the futures market is such a critical thing in the economy. And so, because, you know, you don't just go out and cut down, you know, a tree or something like that and then create lumber and it's available for sale the next week. It takes months to produce that. When you go to the store, you look at the printed on date on a piece of PVC pipe, for example, and I'm familiar with this because I'm building my pool. You look at that date and it's usually a few months prior, because it's not like they're just churning these things out, turning them around and selling them. It's not just in time inventory. It's planned out in advance. And so I don't think there was much, their ability to produce was hindered because of the pandemic. And so even if they forecasted and anticipated the demand, it wasn't going to, they weren't going to be able to fulfill that demand, regardless of whether they knew it was coming or not. And I still think it probably exceeded expectations. But then you also had that big freeze down in Texas, where a lot of our PVC pipe is made. So you think about how PVC pipe is an important commodity in construction. So, you know, everyone thinks about labor, lumber and steel, and indeed, those are also impacted. We're going to talk about those in a second. But PVC pipe was also another thing that was impacted as well, because basically a lot of our manufacturing for PVC pipe domestically happens in Texas. So a lot of those plants had to shut down, and then it takes a while to get those plants up and going. And you had a lot of damage created by the cold, a lot of burst pipes. So even when that demand, when those manufacturers came back online, there was a huge demand in Texas specifically to do a lot of repairs. So that then further hindered our ability to get that stuff out, and prices skyrocketed. So you think about where we are with lumber and steel. Now, lumber has started to come down, but it's still at an elevated level compared to historic prices, even adjusted for, you know, traditional inflation. So in real dollars, in other words. It's lower than the peak that would happen a couple of weeks ago, but it's still high. Same thing with steel. And so there are a couple of factors that go into it. Again, pandemic, imports. We import more of that stuff because we can't produce it domestically. Number one, the prices are lower in overseas, because their labor markets are different and their quality standards are different. But number two, we can't produce the what we need because we're a very consumer-driven society. And remember, a lot of our income that is derived in this country, and a lot of our wealth is based more and more on services. Now we have definitely transitioned toward a service-based economy versus a manufacturing-based economy. So when you do that, that means your demand for manufactured supplies doesn't necessarily go down, but your capacity to provide that for yourself, for your own country, goes down because you don't have as many people working in that industry. So Trump, when he was president, saw this, was lobbied by the steel and lumber industries, and said, hey, we need you to tariff these guys. And so he imposed tariffs to try to bring jobs back to, you know, to those manufacturing jobs. The problem was, usually when you impose tariffs, it's a protectionist movement. It is so that because wages are, or at least jobs are needed because people are out of work, and therefore we need to have a way to protect our own workers and encourage manufacturing in our own country. And indeed, that's what the lobby has said, and they said that it should continue. But the problem, though, is that we impose tariffs in a period of historically low unemployment. And our workforce, relative to our population, continues to drop for a combination of things. Number one, the baby boomers are retiring. So you have, in general, more people dropping out of the workforce than that are entering it. And secondly, people are living longer. So your percentage of retired people in the country just overall is going to continue to rise, because the amount of time people are retired is increasing. Now, that does lead to people, you know, the average age of retirement going up, because people don't have enough money to retire and sustain themselves for that long. But also, It does change the dynamic in terms of supply and demand and how well we can respond to that demand. So the fact, despite the fact that our ability to supply our economy goes down because of that, our demand continues to go up because we're just simply living longer, right? So the tariffs then don't have the intended effect of trying to create jobs in America because we don't need them. Even before the pandemic, we were in a situation where we had more jobs available than people to fill them, okay? And now we're seeing that even more. And part of that is created by the government. I mean, that is a factor. It's not the only factor. I think a lot of people think it's the only factor, but it is a factor. The fact that it actually could potentially cost you money to go back to work, depending on what type of work you do and what type of wage you make in that job. And, you know, interestingly, Biden's infrastructure or Biden's proposed budget did not include, and we talked about this last week, or it was last week or 2 or 3 weeks ago, but we talked about on the show recently that Biden's budget did not include a $15 per hour policy in there. It does include it for federally contracted jobs. So if you're using, in other words, if you're using federal money to, construct things, there's already prevailing wage in general in public sector contracting when it comes to federal money, and that's been a requirement for years. But there is also a clause in there that says anybody that's on the payroll that's receiving federal dollars has to receive at least $15 an hour. So if you're in federal contracting, that's what you have to pay. So that's the only place that we saw it. But in general, it wasn't a blanket rule that we're increasing the minimum wage in any way, shape, or form. So, you know, and I think that's because we're seeing the fact that that could happen organically. So in other words, people are not taking jobs, low-paying jobs anymore, partially because the government has subsidized them to do so. Now, again, is that going to change? That'll be the wild card question. As some of these, as it gets harder to get unemployment benefits, you have to be able to show that you're looking for work, for example. Will that change? I think they're seeing, though, that wages in general are increasing, and that is contributing to inflation as well. So those are the types of things that will sustain the inflation, because the next question is, now we see the inflation, we know it's here. So the next question is that going to stay as demand starts to kind of peak and starts to go back down to normal levels? Because again, we're at heightened demand because of pent-up demand. Because demand was low prior, now we're making up for it now, and eventually that's going to correct itself. Eventually we're going to get to a point where we're back to normal, and we're back to the normal level of demand that we would see in the economy. So the question is then, at that point, does inflation start to come back down, or does it remain at sustaining levels? Well, according to Chapman University, who's, by the way, one of the best out there in terms of economic forecasts, they're saying that inflation will probably stick around till 2023, at least. And they're basing that on historic ideals that show that inflation usually follows a large increase in the money supply. And indeed, that's what we've seen. And that's just things that we've already passed. You know, a lot of people are blaming government spending on the blaming that for the inflation, or at least the increased inflation. And there is some truth to that. That is a fact, that also is a factor. So people have money in their in the federal government is injecting money into the economy, which will naturally increase demand, right? Because people have more money, they have more spendable money, they're going to use it. Although a good sign is that savings is higher than it ever has been in terms of dollars, total dollars. So that's good. That's actually a good thing. So we're not just going out there and just spend. Now, again, that's a factor of the pandemic as well, because you didn't have the opportunity to go spend that. You couldn't go on vacation, for example. A lot of people, when they get that injection of cash, they're going to go and spend it on a vacation maybe, right? Well, you couldn't do that. And you can only buy so many cars. You can only buy so many TVs. You can only buy so many pieces of technology, right? I mean, that the more, you know, you can't, the more tangible goods, there's a finite amount of things that you're going to get. You're not going to go out and get things just to get things, for the most part. Some people are like that. Most people aren't. So where that money ends up is in your savings account. And given everything that's happened and given where things went, to be still at 6% unemployment is still pretty damn good. And I think it'll continue to go down as these benefits kind of sunset. People will need eventually to go back to work, and that will be a factor. But again, like I said before, we didn't have a high unemployment rate. We didn't need the tariffs to create jobs, because the jobs were already there. We just don't have the people to do that. And so that's where you go to, that's where, you know, a legal immigration policy can actually help you. And that's a large part of why we have immigration, because we have, you know, jobs that need to be done and we don't have the people to do them. So what do? You import people to do those jobs, because we don't have the capacity to do it with who we have today. So that's another way that you could do that. But again, even if inflation stays and the Feds react to that, the question then becomes, does that mean we're going to go into another recession? Well, remember, this recession that we just had that looks like it's over, and we're going to have GDP growth north of 6% this year after a decline of about, you know, 3.5%. We actually went, you know, it was a negative 3.5% was our GDP growth in 2020. Does that mean that, you know, we're going to head into another, it's going to be a double dip recession, which you talk about? Well, remember, again, the uniqueness of this recession was that it was completely not caused by the economy, right? So in other words, all the fundamentals underlying the economy were very solid, right? Affordability of homes in terms of percentage of income, even with the prices where they're going right now, and even with the sharp increase in home prices because of steel shortages, because of lumber shortages, because of pipe shortages, those, and just the shortage in inventory, right? The demand is there, the supply is not, prices go up. Very simple, you know, straightforward economics, simple supply and demand curve. But does that, the thing that we start to think about is, oh my gosh, the last time home prices did this, it led to the Great Recession. Well, in 2007, when you looked at, we can use Orange County as an example, because that was a microcosm of what was happening across the country. You had the really, really hot housing market got too hot, prices got too high, we had an adjustment down, caused the Great Recession, right? But remember, that was caused by very lax lending standards and toxic mortgages, right? Remember, mortgage-backed securities was the big thing back then. Mortgage standards are very, very high right now. It is difficult to get a loan unless you have very good credit, you have solid income. For the most part, you have to document the hell out of self-employment income. It's very, very difficult to get a loan if you're self-employed because of what happened in the mid-2000s. That's exactly why that's in place. The banking industry has at least learned enough to know that they have to keep high standards, right? But the difference between now and then is that we've seen a little bit of an uptick, but we still have very, very low interest rates. So when your interest rates are lower, your buying power goes up. So the percentage of income required to purchase a home, even here in 2021 in Orange County, is about 41%. Usually they say about a third of your income to mortgage to income ratio should be about a third, and that's usually the recommended number. But back in 2007, that number was 56% in Orange County. So we're still at a historic number, even though prices are much higher. Affordability, because of the growth in income over those over that period of time, and the lower interest rates, your mortgage for a $1 million home, let's say, right now, is going to be roughly the same as it would have been for a $700,000 home back in 2007. The dollar amount's the same, but incomes have gone up since then because of inflation. Just if they've naturally gone up. So that means affordability all of a sudden is has a much higher profile. So the fear of that of home prices having a crash, I think, are very small at this point. Now, if the Feds do increase rates, if they do increase interest rates, that could change. So in other words, you know, if it goes from like about 3% what it is now to like 4.5% in, say, 2023, which is what Chapman University sees happening, that's going to cause about a 15% drop in home prices to maintain that affordability, even factoring in growth in income over that same period of time. So if you see an interest rate increase of 100 basis points, it's going to cost about a 10% drop in home prices. So if you're in the market to sell, now's the time to do it, because we're going to see a peak. But will it affect the overall economy? Probably not. It won't impact the economy like it did back in the mid-2000s, because that led to a cascade. But because the underlying factors of why house prices were going up were flawed. This time they're based more on historic and solid fundamentals. So they're in other words, they're growing for the right reasons. The prices are going up for the right reasons. Okay. I think that there does need to be a slowdown in it, and I think we're gonna see that soon as we're able to start producing more homes again. Again, increasing the supply will then taper that down right now. It's hard to buy a house right now because the average time that a home spends on the market is less than 2 weeks, which is just unheard of. That's unheard of. 60 days is usually pretty good. Back in the, 2008, 2009, it was 6 months. It was about 180 days that a house would sit on the market. That's bad. But 60 days is usually historically about right. So 2 weeks is just crazy. That's just crazy. So that goes to show you that how much higher demand is than supply. And of course, that means prices are going to go up. And then, but again, people can't get mortgages if they can't afford those prices. So a lot of people are selling and then buying, putting large home down payments down, which is why they can afford more house. They're investing in it, whether it's for Airbnbs or rentals, because the rental market's really tight right now as well. It's almost impossible to find a rental. So, what do we do about all this? Do we end, the tariffs don't make a lot of sense. They really don't, because all that's doing is increasing prices for all of us. It's not creating new jobs because we don't need them. We don't need the jobs. If you don't need the jobs, then all tariffs will do is just, we're just going to pay more for the products we're getting from overseas. That's the only thing that's going to happen, because the demand doesn't change. The demand's still there. We're not able to increase supply because they can't hire the workers that they need to manufacture, no matter what the level of the tariffs are, they still can't hire the people to make the stuff. So the supply doesn't change. Usually what you're thinking is with tariffs, the idea is you have a shift from the supply, you decrease the supply of imports, and you increase the supply of things that are produced domestically, which then creates jobs, right? That can't happen right now because we don't have the labor supply to do that. So the tariffs are only costing us money. That was the wrong reason to do tariffs. So that is a factor. If they drop the tariffs, will it lower the prices of some of these products? Yeah, but not by a lot. The fact of the matter is, even with all the restrictions being lifted here, I was watching, I saw some highlights from the Golden Knights versus the Montreal Canadiens, game three of the semifinals, the Stanley Cup semifinal, because they can't call it conference finals because they didn't do conferences this year. And they're playing in Montreal and there's no crowd. But in Vegas, the building was full because they're having problems getting the vaccine out. So they're still far, they're still behind where we are. So as the United States is very much open now, Canada still has a long way to go because they're still not able to vaccinate everybody. So they still have lockdowns and they still have quarantines. Whereas that's not happening, and that's happening in other countries too, but not here. So it takes, you talk about the slow boat to China, right? Typically, it takes 23 days to get stuff from China to here. But now you have to add 14 days on either side for quarantine. So therefore, you're adding another 28 days to a 23-day journey. So now it takes more than twice as long to get stuff here. You can imagine what that will do. So again, that's another factor that we're dealing with in all of this stuff. So even though the economy is open here and things are opening up and things are trying to start going back to normal, because it's not that way globally, we're still going to be impacted on it. Because again, we rely on the global economy because we are a society of consumers and we're a service-based economy, which means that we are always going to rely on imports to support our economy. It's just a factor of life. Unless we change our spending habits, unless we change our consumption habits, which we boast about having the best quality of life in the world, even though, you know, there's some measures that don't show that. But in terms of our wealth, in terms of our ability to spend and our ability to buy things, we're still number one. And we cannot as a society keep up with that demand, no matter what we do. So we rely on imports to keep that lifestyle going. So we're always going to have that. So what can we do about that? Well, we don't need to shoot ourselves in the foot by charging tariffs that we end up paying. That's a tax on us. And by the way, it's not a write-off. We can't write off those taxes. Those are taxes we're paying in the goods that we're consuming. And we're starting to see that in the prices because we're just artificially increasing the price of the goods coming over, which are already impacted by supply chain challenges. So then we're further shooting ourselves in the foot by putting a tariff on top of that. See how that works? That's why it's a factor and people think, oh, that's the magic bullet because Trump did it. Yeah, it's probably not good, but it's not going to do enough to really say, okay, now prices are stabilized. We're still going to see elevated prices as long as our demand stays up, our supplies stay down, and we have all this money coming in from the federal government. Those are all the factors that are going into this. Now, that is all to say that do I think that it's going to lead to a recession? I don't think so. I don't think so. I do think that historically, the rate of inflation is going to be lower relative to the massive increase in government spending and money supply than it has in the past. So in other words, what they're saying is that when we've seen 20-25% increases in the money supply like we've seen recently, that has led to double-digit inflations in some cases. We're talking about 5%, 5.5%, somewhere in that range. That's still low relative to historic times, which means that it won't have as much of an impact, a negative impact on the economy, which is good. And so that means, you know, again, the fundamentals in the economy are good. And I think that does bode well for us going forward. So that's some good news, I think. And you know, we'll see how it happens. But anyway, that's gonna do it for the Modern Podcast. We're already done for the day. I have really nothing else to say. I could probably sit here and rant another hour on it, but I would just be repeating myself, I think, at this point. So remember to visit our website at themoderatepodcast.com. We are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. Just check us out there on the website. All of our links are there. Check out our sponsor for today, Relief Factor. Check out the link in the show notes to get your discount, like we talked about at the beginning. Much appreciated if you do that. And I think that's about it. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. Happy Father's Day to my dad. We will be going up to their house tomorrow in Lake Arrowhead. I'm excited. We haven't been there in a long time, so I'm excited for that. And I think that's about it. So hopefully we'll see you next week if we have something to talk about. And until then, have a great week. Stay safe and keep it real.